Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we've spent a lot of today reacting emotionally to where the Browns are as Deshaun Watson has torn his Achilles. There's a lot of debate or a lot of speculation potentially about which type of Achilles surgery he's going to have. So obviously each one comes with its own pack of kind of details to follow there. But for now, what matters is that the Browns won't have Deshaun for the rest of this season. That then calls into question his future in Cleveland. And to talk about the latest Browns loss, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome on Browns analyst Nathan Zagura today. Nathan, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. We gotta hopefully get some of these after a victory. It'll be, I think, more fun for everybody.
I think, I will say, not to completely crib notes from Bull Durham, but I definitely love winning more than I do losing. I don't know if that's a hot take or not.
Do you love winning more than you hate losing?
Oh, man, I don't know, because I really hate losing, Nathan.
Yeah, it's not even a question for me. I hate losing infinitely more than I like winning.
Although the only
winning should be at some point the expectation, right? So then it should be like, that's what I'm here to do, is to win. And then losing would be the Mamba mentality. Can't stomach it.
That's why people always call me the other Mamba, they call me. Kobe was, you know, the Black Mamba, but I'm the other Mamba is what they would call me.
Yes.
But which I never found derogatory, because he was really good at basketball. Nathan, let's start here. Does Deshaun's injury in the latest loss, does that change the aims for the rest of the season?
I think that when you are looking at this season, once you traded Amari last week, that was a signal at some level, right, that you were already having the mindset of having 1 foot in to the 2024 season and 1 foot into 2025 and beyond. So I think that you already had acknowledged with that trade that. I think that it continues now, and obviously is you're down that path. You're at 1-6. Deshaun is lost for the season. Now I think it's all about finding out what can we get to stockpile in terms of assets? Who's going to be the core that we absolutely want to go forward with? Everybody else will take whatever assets we can get for them. And, you know, I think part of it is also figuring out who is the quarterback of the future and even, you know, 2025, the beginning of 2025, what that looks like. Deshaun's going to have a very long and arduous rehab ahead of him. It's an injury that, you know, puts into question, you know, whether or not he will play again. You just don't know how that kind of an injury can affect a quarterback. We've seen, you know, Aaron Rodgers come back and Kirk Cousins come back. And quite frankly, you know, in the early going, they have not quite looked the same as they did pre-injury. And so I think that's going to be what it's about. I think, you know, in the very near term, obviously it means either Jameis or DTR are starting. You know, I kind of talked about it on Browns Daily today. I would be all for, you know, Jameis starting the next two at home. And then taking the bye week, giving DTR 2 weeks and an 8 week kind of audition to say, can I be, you know, the Brock Purdy who, you know, helped the 49ers overcome a trade that put them in a tough spot due to, you know, Trey Lance not working out? Can DTR be that? And he really, to me, I feel like he's the only in-house option that has a chance to be a longer term solution. And you give him 8 games and see if he can show that.
Nathan, did when the injury happened, because I felt this way, so I'll editorialize it from that standpoint. My initial thought was, man, it feels like the last time we're going to see Deshaun as the starter, and maybe the last time we're going to see him in a uni as the guy for this team. I know the contract is there, but is that how it felt as you were watching that unfold, given the previous, 3 years in the way things have fallen down?
My mind didn't go there. You know, as I said, though, knowing the nature of the injury, yeah, you wonder if that's the way that it will go. At the time, it was just you saw the replay, you saw kind of that calf explosion. You knew exactly what it was, non-contact. And it's a tough scene, regardless of how people feel about Deshaun. You know, I think you saw the respect of his teammates and coaches who were all there around him on the field. It's anybody who works hard at something and has come back from something, just like we saw Nick Chubb make a triumphant return yesterday, and that was awesome to see. You know how, and you read it kind of in the players' room, just what an arduous process that is. So you never want anybody to have to go through something like that. But I really didn't contemplate kind of the long-term ramifications of it, just that, you know, I think, you know, you've seen him now for basically what amounts to over a little bit over a full season. It has not, unfortunately, looked the way, other than brief glimpses over three separate seasons, of how you wanted it to. It's the second season that ends early with a significant injury. And so you wonder, is he somebody that you could even count on for a full season at this point? And then what's he going to be when he comes back? Because typically that's not an injury that allows you to come back maybe even at the same level as you were. It diminishes your skills somewhat, your ability to move. And he relies certainly on movement more than Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins, two of the quarterbacks I referenced earlier with Achilles injuries. So I think it's a long road. I think it's something that will be dealt with in the future. But I think right now, if you're the Cleveland Browns, your priority is finding that quarterback. And then internally, can DTR be that guy on that rookie contract for you? And if not, you know, can he show that he's a good backup for you, and you then go into the draft and try to find somebody next year that can be more of a long-term solution? I think you have to at least consider those possibilities and look at it that way.
Nathan, are the Browns as they were 3 years ago? Are the Browns still a quarterback away?
I don't think that's the case right now. The Browns have had a lot of struggles, and I think a lot of people wanted to blame them solely on Deshaun Watson, and I don't think that's the case. Now, we're getting to see, you know, Nick Chubb comes back, gets in the end zone. That's great. I thought the defense, you know, for the second week in a row against pretty good talent, played very well. I mean, they held the Bengals to 2 of 13 on third downs in this game. They were spectacular in that regard. They didn't allow a third down conversion until in the third quarter. In fact, they didn't allow a point defensively until into the third quarter. But I do think that, you know, there are a lot of things that have gone. The offensive line continues to be a problem, and the pre-snap penalties continue to be a problem. I think there are still things that are beyond the quarterback, but a truly great quarterback lifts everything around them, right? And so if you have that guy, does that help everything? Of course, it most certainly does. So I think when you're probably a quarterback away from being, you know, what we thought we might be this year, but I think that, again, the problems extend well beyond the quarterback in terms of the reasons why this Browns team sits where it is, which is, honestly, if this wouldn't even have been on one of a billion scenarios that I could have come up with when I got to the Greenbrier and we began the preparations for this season. It's really a stunning, stunning turn of events.
I think stunning is the perfect way to describe just how bleak it got, how quickly it got, but there is football to be played. Nathan Zagura on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'm glad you called out. I'm glad Nick Chubb getting that touchdown. And I know the numbers, big picture, you know, what is it, 11 carries, 22 yards. He did have the touchdown, but I actually made sure to turn over and make sure I was listening to you guys as that was setting up, because I wanted to hear your call of Nick getting that touchdown. And I'm just curious, as a guy who's watched this team as acutely as you have and watched this, walk me through your emotions as you see Nick Chubb score that touchdown in his return game from that very serious injury.
Oh, man, it was, his whole return was powerful. And it's unfortunate that, you know, things are the way they are, so that's not the top story today. It's not even just, you know, Nick Chubb and his return and getting in the end zone and a Browns win, all of those things. He, you know, worked so hard to get back. He embodies everything that you, I think, want out of a football player. He is so important to this city. I got a chance to talk with him prior to the game, and, you know, just the emotion that he had for a guy who's not very talkative, doesn't really wear his emotions on his sleeve. You knew how special and meaningful this was to him, and I think it was awesome. You know, he gets in there, 53rd career touchdown, 49th career rushing touchdown, I believe it was. Just awesome. Awesome to be a part of it. And unfortunately, has been the way with the Browns near the goal line is, you know, you thought he scored, and then an offensive line penalty inside the five for the third straight week, backed you up 5 yards. Now, it was great that they were able to overcome it. He was able to get in there on fourth down. But, yeah, that was a big one. I'm sure if they release the call of that, there'll be some fist pumping in the booth there. But because it meant more than just a touchdown. Also, at the time, you thought, oh, man, we're back in this thing. We're going to tie it up. Unfortunately, D-Hop, missed the extra point. But, yeah, that was emotional and powerful. And it's just it's great to see Nick Chubb. I hope in the future we're able to give him a little more room to run the football.
Now back the other way, do we have any working theories on what's going on on D-Hop? Because there have been a fair more amount of oopsies this year than there were last year.
Yeah, he's missed 3 field goals. That's his first miss inside of 50 yards, on the season. It's a little bit surprising, but I give him a ton of credit because D-Hop comes right out and he addressed the media and he owns it. And says I've got to be better, and missed the extra points, his second missed extra point, and I think this was a big one emotionally, as was the one in Las Vegas coming off the Rodney McLeod scoop and score. Those things matter, and they matter for a little bit in terms of momentum and just your belief, all of that stuff. So nobody's perfect in that business, and I think we were very spoiled last year with how good he was. I still think he's been a very good kicker and made a great deal of his kicks this year, especially from distance. It happens. Even somebody who's 90% inside of 50 yards, that means you miss one out of every 10. And so I think that's kind of just, unfortunately, bad timing there with D-Hop. But I have a lot of belief in his ability, and I know he's a guy who's going to work very hard to make sure that he gets that right.
Nathan, with the defense, that was, you take away the punt return, they're not accountable for that. You saw the defense getting after the quarterback more. They were a little bit more, they just looked a hell of a lot better. I'm just curious, can they continue to ascend the way that they felt like they ascent yesterday, or continue to ascend yesterday, even if maybe you're still trying to figure out the pieces around them and what next year looks like?
Yeah, and I think, you look at the last 2 weeks of the defense. They went to Philadelphia, held, I think, a team with a lot of talent on it to 20 points. They completely shut down Saquon Barkley, which nobody else has done in the league so far this year. I mean, he goes off that game and ends up with over 170 yards rushing this week. I thought that, like I said, the third down performance this week was very good. Denzel's playing at a very high level. By Joe Burrow standards this year, you did a pretty good job against him. I mean, Joe Burrow in this one ended up with, 181 yards net gross passing, 164 net passing. That's one of the lowest outputs of the season for him. So I thought I was very pleased with the defense. I think they gave every chance to this offense, which unfortunately has been the real problem this year. And in fact, Bengals only possessed the ball for 25 minutes in this game. It just, the Browns have not been able to put enough points on the scoreboard, and that's it. I mean, if offense was playing, averaging, 24 a game, we have a completely different record here. So while the defense has not been the number one defense, I think it's almost impossible. That's one of those things that year to year is very difficult to maintain. And the NFL is not a league anymore where you really are able to win solely on the back of a defense week in and week out. It's the rules are slanted against it. There's so many things that are slanted against it and for the offense to win. And the Browns offense, unfortunately, has not done that at a high enough level. But I think the Browns defense has been pretty good, especially the last couple of weeks.
Nathan, appreciate you, buddy. Again, I was just happy for you guys to be able to get that Nick Chubb call, and happy for Nick Chubb. It was a really, really good moment out of some less than fun things yesterday. So it was great to hear, bud.
Yeah, appreciate that. And, another chance this week. Obviously, tough matchup with the Ravens coming to town. But, hopefully this team can find a way to start get it going.
And we're on to Baltimore. See you next week, buddy. Nathan Zagura there, Browns analyst in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Browns analyst Nathan Zagura joining us last segment, as he does every single Monday here on post-Browns games. And, all right, where are we? How do we kind of move on here? And, listen, I do think, and I would expect the overall conditions of being a Browns fan to improve a little bit post this Deshaun injury, because we don't have to talk about Deshaun every single day. Because one of the things that happens when somebody has a season-ending injury is you begin to talk about the games that are being played and the results of those things. And what's next? And it does feel like yesterday, in one way or another, was the culmination of Deshaun's time here. It doesn't mean he won't be on the roster next year. Doesn't mean there might not come a point in the future where he doesn't play again or does play again. Those decisions are probably 3 months away, 4 months away, at least for next year. And then the big picture decision about his contract and all that stuff, that starts as soon as this offseason and then goes into how do you kind of deal with that money in the future. But in the immediate of everything, it did feel like not only was your chance to right the ship this year lost yesterday, but I think because, listen, let's be honest, guys, they looked awful with DTR at quarterback too. And I think we can have a glimmer of hope that Jameis looked good against the prevent defense. But the one way in which the Deshaun injury gets me back here is all of a sudden the possibilities of conversations we have about the Browns are pretty endless. And so when it comes to, like, I'll be honest, I still don't understand the decision to play, to have DTR as the backup and Jameis as the emergency quarterback, which honestly yesterday was an incredibly winnable game. And so I think we got a couple explanations from Kevin Stefanski today and yesterday. None of them really satiated. Like, DTR didn't look ready. He didn't look like a guy who was ready. Whether this involved, you know, Jameis's short yardage package not being in the game plan, whether this was about, hey, if we have to go from Deshaun to DTR, we want to, or to a backup, we want to go to the young guy to give him a chance. Whatever it was, for like the second time in 2 years, the Browns have put DTR in an impossible situation. And I'll be honest with you, I do think as interesting as Deshaun's injury and all the different things and conversations it opens up, I think we're in full evaluation mode, which is what I think you heard there from Nathan, which is who do you move forward with and who do you get assets for? I don't think that's just about the roster that you have. I think everybody is under examination now. In a way, Deshaun being forced to play Deshaun was the ultimate, and I mean the ultimate, get-out-of-jail-free card because everybody just blamed Deshaun. Hey, you like Kevin Stefanski, right? It's not his fault. He's being forced to play Deshaun. So we can just absolve ourselves of the Kevin Stefanski conversation. Now that Deshaun's out for the rest of the year, there's no absolving anything. Kevin's got 10 games to either right the ship. And right the ship isn't just about winning. It's about making an offense look halfway passable again. Kevin's got 10 games to not lose the locker room. And guys, I think we're close. I don't think that has a damn thing to do with Deshaun either. Whether it was Elijah Moore getting benched in for the first quarter yesterday's game, something which Kevin didn't really speak to in any sort of meaningful way, or whether it is Jed Wills olaying yet another just, I don't know, elite-level edge rusher. Like, I'll be honest, like I want to see discipline now from Kevin Stefanski's team. I want to see this turn into a, if this is really about evaluating who's going to be here in the future and who's not, I want this to turn into a meritocracy. You want to win me over? You want me to be excited about this game on Sunday? First thing, I don't want to see Jed Wills on the field anymore. That's something I'm watching for. Because Jed, the effort, focus, accountability continues to evade him in a way that makes it tough to be a Browns fan watching him play. Maybe that's not fair, but I'll be honest with you. I think we've got enough of volume on how Jed has played. What's the next 10 games going to change when it comes to Jed Wills? So if this is like Amari Cooper where you can move on, but like guys, okay, if Elijah Moore, if something happened where you benched him in the first quarter, which by the way, first quarter benchings, this is not Alabama. This is not Florida. It's not college. We're, hey, you whippersnapper. We got to deal with this. We're going to teach you. You know, the guy doesn't have to be active, right? And so I'll be honest with you. Andrew Berry's a little tougher because the things that you evaluate a GM on, the things that I hate that keep GMs their jobs. Well, how many picks did you get? That does nothing for me. You see, laser eyes. You got a fourth rounder for Zadarius, and then you got another fourth rounder for Jack Conklin. Well, that certainly changes the fact he hasn't found a good wide receiver in the draft in 4 years. Well, hey, Cedric Tillman, am I right? You got a seventh rounder for Corey Bohorquez for a punter. Well, that sure changes the fact that the draft record in general is pretty woeful. So the point is, is Andrew Berry under some sort of evaluation? Yes. But the season did become interesting when Deshaun officially was out for the rest of the season, because now it is everything should be on the table. The Deshaun injury was the great panacea, the great just stopgap. It's all Deshaun's fault, and Deshaun's the reason we're bad. And the reality is, guys, it takes more than just one guy to get to 1-6 when you came into the season coming off a playoff run with championship expectations. And so going forward, I expect the Browns to operate. Because listen, the reason why you play Jed on that contract of $15 million, the reason why you do it is, well, he gives you the best chance to win. When you're playing guys based off what they're paid, it's a big thing. I just made the shot about this is in Alabama and this is in Florida. 100%, guys, I want this to be a meritocracy. Hey, Jed, you just whiffed on Trey Hendrickson, arguably one of the 5 or 10 best edge rushers in football, and then threw a little hissy fit on, okay, cool, you don't have to play next week. This one's on us. Hey, Elijah, we're not going to bench you for a quarter. We're going to bench you for a game. Or make a business decision on behalf of those players. Because if they continue to lose and the Browns continue to just let these guys get paid a lot of money to go out there, it's only going to make... There is a difference between losing because you're not talented enough to win. And there's a difference between not having the fight in a locker room. The latter is what gets Kevin Stefanski fired. And everybody keeps saying, like, every time we've talked about somebody, like, hey, this doesn't feel right. Where's Kevin's responsibility in this? Whether it's been Albert or Ross Tucker or anybody, guys you're going to hear from this week, every time it's been, well, something would have to go really, really bad for it to be about Kevin this year. 10 games. I'm not wishing for this, by the way. But this year was about, can you take the next step and do the thing that this organization hasn't done since 1988 and 1989, which is sustain culture across seasons and have back-to-back winning seasons. Well, that is all the way out the window. And so I'm excited to see Cedric Tillman, who played really well yesterday. Not really understanding why Jerry Jeudy was Captain Krabby Pants yesterday, but I'm excited to see Jerry Jeudy. All right, let's go ahead and open up the offense. Hey, and here's the other thing. What's stopping Kevin from bringing back the Kubiak offense? Right? Because if that's supposed to be his whoobie, if that's supposed to be the only way he can have success, it makes a lot of sense to maybe minimize Ken Dorsey, and all of a sudden you rebuild that Kubiak offense and see if you can... Because, again, it's not necessarily about winning, but it is about putting guys in a position to compete. The easy thing is to say, well, I'm going to watch the Browns the rest of the year in hopes that they get the number one pick. Yeah, that's probably the best thing that happens to them. That losing from here this season, if it is a sunk cost of a season, getting the seventh pick doesn't help you as much as getting the number one pick. Whether there's a quarterback worthy of being taken one, I have no idea. The only way to get somebody on this situation long-term at quarterback, it's probably DTR doing it. And if DTR can't do it, well, it probably makes sense that you draft a quarterback next year, because then you don't have to worry about bringing in a veteran to go ahead and play while Deshaun rehabs. And then, by the way, you're not really going to be able to afford a veteran of substance. So it's going to be another Jacoby. It's going to be another Joe Flacco. It's going to be another guy who there's a reason that that person is available at this point in their career, which probably leads to more losing. So even if next year is another year of development or whatever, retooling, rebuilding, whatever, okay, but it's got to be leading somewhere. But there are now plenty of reasons. Because the Deshaun thing is no longer hanging over this roster, there is now obvious things to watch for the rest of the season. But the number one thing is, see if Kevin Stefanski can lead his way out of this abyss. Because I don't know it's definitive. I think it's very easy to say today, well, he's gone. I don't know. I can't say anything for certain today. But how it looks for Kevin going forward, how that locker room looks, whether they have fight, what it, all the different tributaries of all this, that is going to go a long way into deciding whether it's this year or next year, how much power, how much say, how much leeway Kevin really has. 216-474-0092. So now that it's not Deshaun, going into really all this, it's been about can Deshaun pull the nose up on the plane? Now that Deshaun is off in rehab land, what are the things you're looking for the rest of this season? Let's go with Mike in Vermilion. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Mr. Wilson?
Not much, buddy. What you got?
I am not a supporter of Andrew Berry. I am a supporter of trading Myles Garrett, trying to get a first, possibly two first rounds, other draft picks. I am a fan of getting rid of Denzel Ward, but if you were to get rid of your key players, you have to get another GM because Andrew Berry, I mean, his first number one draft pick was Jedrick Wills. So all I have to say is that we're in a pretty bad situation. It doesn't matter how many draft picks we stack. We are going to have a horrible team if Andrew Berry is still the GM. Thank you.
Mike, appreciate you. I have no interest in trading Miles. Miles messaging yesterday, I said in the first hour of the show, I thought it was flawed. I certainly empathize with his frustration about, you know, this idea that fans were cheering Deshaun's injury, but how he went about it wasn't a fan of. Also, it's the second year in which Miles has tried to tell fans how to fan. Not really crazy about that. I'd like Miles to be here the rest of his career. I don't want to let momentary for there. I'll be honest with you guys. You could get five first rounders for Miles. I just don't think how I think you're just going to be trying to find another Miles. He is a unicorn. He should play the rest of his career here. Almost anybody else? Yeah, it's a conversation. 216-474-0092. What are you watching the rest of the season for with the Browns? Like, what is the new thing? If the first seven games were all about Deshaun and can he do it, will he do it, what are the next 10 games about for the Cleveland Browns? 92.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I know I'm going to disappoint you for a moment. I've had so much fun going scorched earth on the Cleveland Browns and trying to make heads and tails of 1-6 and how we got here and why we got here. And we got more of that to come. Can we take a quick just moment? Can we have a moment of enjoyment of the Cleveland Guardians season now that it's over? Can we do that? And I will say, I have a whole new thing to root on the World Series. It's called the Los Angeles Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani getting his ring and getting his just desserts as the best player in baseball. But I digress, because I really want to give Austin Hedges credit for the magic trick that he pulled this season. Because about 7 or 8 months ago when they signed Hedgie, I, like many of you, cursed many a words off air about paying a guy who can't hit, is seemingly felt like a cheerleader for this team and not really a playable player, giving him $4 or $5 million. Well, he went out there and I think he was a huge part of why they had the success that they had. And so just that is where I was most wrong in the Guardians. That I also thought Ramon Laureano could still ball, and turns out that's not a thing anymore. That's okay. It's okay. But I thought it was great. If you guys missed it, again, the Guardians are going to have their kind of end of season stuff tomorrow. And so we're going to have more on the end of the Guardian season. I know some of the emotion has subsided because obviously we had Brown's emotions taking over. But I really loved Hedgie was Austin Hedges this weekend after losing to the Yankees on game 5 was the exact kind of chippy that I think pulled off the greatest magic trick we've ever seen.
I mean, I wouldn't say underachieved. I mean, every single team that doesn't win the World Series underachieved. There's only one goal, there's only one champion, but essentially there's 29 teams that underachieve. But I mean, I felt like we proved a lot of people wrong. You can look at our win-loss, our over-under going into the year. All the people that wrote about us were just blatantly wrong, just not even close to right. So hopefully going into next year, they project us to win more than like 74 games.
You tell them, King. I gotta say, I don't know what point this season that the magic trick was complete. Going from where I went from somebody that was like, this mother trucker is out here hitting .150 for my favorite team. He's an automatic out. Why? I don't know the exact moment when he pulled off this magic trick where all of a sudden I am so team Austin Hedges. But maybe it was, honestly, maybe it was even the playoffs where, and it was wasted because they didn't follow up on it, where Hedgie got the double in the ALCS. I don't know if it was that, but can I just tell you, that is the exact kind of cattiness I needed to counteract with, because it's so funny. Cleveland sports Twitter was such a cesspool this weekend. And the obvious thing is to point to the Deshaun stuff and all the crap that comes out of that entire situation and every different tributary, which feels like some exhausting fight after another. I was pretty exhausted on Saturday night talking about the Guardian season and how derivative some fans were with the reaction to the Guardians losing to the Yankees, which includes going back to the payroll conversation, which includes going back to grown-ass men saying things like loser mentality when talking about a team that everyone thought was going to win 78 games and won 91 games and was went to the ALCS as the 2 seed and actually won a playoff series. I was pretty exhausted by it. So to hear Hedges after the game this weekend be kind of a catty bee about it, I loved every second about it. But I will say, I don't know that the people that I saw on Saturday night who are ranting and raving like lunatics if you were upset about losing, my quarrel is not with you. It really isn't. It sucked to lose. The way they lost was heartbreaking. Tanner Bibee had his best start of the postseason. You got an opportunity where Class A looked like Class A again. You should have won that game. And it was defeating that you lost the game. But to see the immediate reframing of that this was a failure, or that this was not a success, or that the Guardians themselves have anything to be ashamed of, made me wonder if those fans had actually watched this team ever. It did, and I'm not trying to tell you how to fan, because you can feel however you want about it. But my takeaway on Saturday wasn't the Dolans is cheap. It wasn't Chernetti should have been done this or done that at the deadline. As far as I saw it, two of the best players in the playoffs this year were deadline acquisitions. It was Matthew Boyd, yeah, Boyd, and Lane Thomas. And by the way, Lane Thomas in Cleveland was better than Jazz Chisholm was in New York. I digress. But this, because it really only applies to the Guardians. When the Browns go 11-6 and lose in the playoffs, it's, man, what a season. Even when they got beat by Houston, it was, what a season. That was so cool. That was so great. The Cavs, I'll be honest, there's a point of frustration with the Cavs. And I'll be honest, I was the biggest aggressor this year of what the hell are the Cavs doing. And a lot of that is I feel a little frustrated with Kobe Altman, and I thought Jamie Bickerstaff was outclassed as a coach, and I hate feeling like that's the case. But listen, you didn't lose because of payroll. You didn't lose for a myriad of reasons. You lost because, quite frankly, Jose and Josh weren't good enough when it mattered. You didn't have enough starting pitching. And Stephen Vogt made a couple decisions that took that from maybe a 6- or 7-game series to being a 5-game series. All of which I can live with. I can. But this idea that somehow, because you lost in 5 games, I'll be honest with you, here's another thing, because I'm just free-forming it right now, just throwing things out. I actually thought that was a really competitive series. You can say, but it was 5 games. Guardians had multiple chances to win each one of those games, and whether you want to spin that as the Yankees just were better than them or they didn't take advantage of those opportunities, however you want to do it, the reality is the Guardians, if I had told you you're going to lose in the ALCS to the Yankees, you're going to get something like 5 or 6 home games in the playoffs, and you're going to do so without any semblance of a starting rotation on the back of an elite bullpen and with an offense that is good, not great. If you could have signed up for that in March, you would have signed up 10 times over. And you can have your frustrations about the organization till you're blue in the face. That team, those dudes, deserve your respect. I'm not talking about the Dolans. I'm talking about Austin Hedges, Josh Naylor, Jose Ramirez, John Kensi Noel, Tanner Bibee, Emmanuel Classe, Tim Heron, the entirety of that bullpen, because there are too many guys to mention at this point, Avila, Lane Thomas, Stephen Kwan, Stephen Vogt. They deserve nothing more than a tip of cap, because that was a hell of a season, and it didn't end the way we want to. But I don't know there was ever more of a disparity in how you should feel as a Browns fan and how you should feel as a Guardians fan, given the way their two seasons have played out. JP joins us. We'll get into the Browns debacle next on 92.3 The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld at Odyssey Podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.